This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Paul. Dennis Altman is a name that really our community has a lot, owes you a lot, Dennis. You've been at the barricades for 40-odd years?
Oh.
Go on, you have.
At least, because, yeah. I mean, my first memory of the barricades was that first ever gay demonstration in Australia, in Sydney, in, I think, 1971.
Oh. 1971.
I was, of course, only three, and I was there in a pram. I hope everyone realises that.
Now, that was during the McMahon government.
It probably was, yes.
And 1971, you know, that's a very, very long time ago. Look, over all these decades, you know, Dennis, you know, the one thing that I always, you know, remember about you is that you don't give up. You know, you persist and, you know, you maintain your pressure, you know, you maintain your integrity around the issues. And not everyone in our community is always going to agree with you, but that's all right. You know,
I think most of the time few people agree with me, which is quite good. I mean, I think that is actually the role of a writer, to say the things that are not necessarily the commonly held views.
Yeah. But I have a response to that, Dennis, is don't worry, people can't help it if they're wrong.
You know, I'm prepared to admit that I am sometimes the person who's wrong.
Oh, hang on, make a note of that.
That's headlines, yeah, let's keep that one.
But your latest book, Unrequited Love, Life of an Accidental Activist. Why were you an accidental activist? You probably never thought, oh, God, I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing this.
I'm always a bit uneasy when people term me an activist, because most of my activism has actually stemmed from my writing, and I think of myself more as a writer than an activist. The accidental part really goes back to 1971 when I was in New York. I needed somewhere to live. I was there for a number of months, and I found an apartment share in the East Village, which was actually where the people who produced the first gay paper in New York, Come Out, used to meet. So I found myself, because of where I was living, part of the collective of that very early gay lib paper. And in a sense, that led me into, I guess, the rest of my life.
Well, I think you are an activist, but your activism often takes the form of what you write.
Yes.
You know, you do research, you base, you know, what you say on the evidence that you find and that you verify. Where do you think we are now, Dennis? The next challenge that we as a community face, we met marriage equality and we didn't, you know, we won that argument, but I think we left some people behind and some groups behind. The religious freedoms discussion or the religious discrimination discussion, what's your gut feel on that? You know, are we approaching it the right way? You know, are we leaving people behind on this? What are your thoughts?
My gut feeling is that we're probably handling it reasonably well, but I think, I also don't think that if the bill in its present form goes through, it will in practice be nearly as disastrous as people think. But I recognise that because there are certain things in the legislation which are certainly unattractive and could be used to discriminate, we need to oppose it. Mm. But my sense is that the real point about the marriage debate was that we had a national vote by accident, one could say, or by Peter Dutton trying to be cleverer than he turned out to be, which showed that a clear majority of people in Australia actually accept us
Yes.
And accept a certain degree of sexual and gender diversity. I think the two issues that I get most upset about are, in fact, what's going on globally, what's going on in many countries near Australia, such as Indonesia, where there is mounting homophobia. Yes. And I think we need a much bigger and more nuanced discussion about how we, in a country where we're pretty well off, in all sorts of ways, can help people in those sorts of situations. And I think one of the areas where we can do that, quite specifically, is around people who seek asylum in Australia yes. because they're persecuted for their gender identity or their sexuality. And I think this is something I'd really like to see our community take up in a big way and exercise political pressure over.
Why do you think they don't?
Well, I wouldn't be too adamant in saying they don't, because there are a number of groups.
A lot of people are with
who them, are. Yeah. There's actually a very interesting conference that will be held in Canberra in the middle of November on this issue. The Pride Foundation, which is the former Galfa, yep. which I'm very proud to be a patron, so therefore I'm biased, but Pride Foundation has taken this up. There are a number of... I think that most people get it. I think we haven't yet brought it into the mainstream discussion or the mainstream gay media.
Yeah. I want to take you back to the book a second, because I think you've got a phenomenal life. And writing your memoirs and trying to give people a glimpse into just a fraction of the stuff you've done must have brought back for you so many memories, perhaps of things that you had forgotten even you had done. How did you actually get through the process of actually getting all those great pieces of story and a narrative onto the page?
Well, it's a lovely question. Look, I think I should explain for people who don't know that it's written in the form of a diary. It's basically a diary over 2 years, and I use that form to go back and forth in time. And the reason I could do that primarily is that because of advice I was given when I was young by Christopher Isherwood, I have kept a diary now for over 40 years. Now, the diary is essentially an extended appointments book, and it is sometimes embarrassing when I discover there were people who were of enormous moment to me, and I have no idea anymore who they are. But the great thing about diaries is they give you dates, they give you a chronology, and they allow you, therefore, to go and check other things. I also, you know, I've plagiarised myself, which I think writers are allowed to do, and so I've included a few bits that are actually from, in some cases, articles that never got published. So I'm the only person who had access to them, and it was fun doing that. You know, I have, for example, an account of being on some terrible LA talk show in the early 80s when I was promoting another book and meeting the strippers from Chippendales.
Fantastic.
I keep a diary too, Dennis, and I don't know if yours is the same. It's things I've done, but it's also comments and thoughts on what's happening. And often I go back to it and I think, yes, that's why I made that decision in that time, or that person was a prick.
Well, yeah. that is probably a much more interesting way of keeping a diary. Mine is essentially just a record of what I've done. What is wonderful is that a couple of times now I've shown up in other people's diaries, so I can measure their accounts against mine. And, of course, nowadays, if one knows how to do it, and I probably don't, there's a huge amount of material we could just access from social media. I mean, all those Facebook posts, all those innumerable photos of people's morning cappuccinos will be presumably rich fodder for very boring long diaries.
And all date stamped as well, so people will know exactly where they were when they took the picture.
And the dates are so important. The other thing I'd say is passports. If you've travelled, always keep your old passports. They are invaluable, because they're basically, I think, unimpeachable.
So another question for you. You've done an awful lot. What are the things that you've done that you're most proud of?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I've thought about that. I suppose because I'm so conscious of the fact that one does things that come to you by chance. I think I was very, very lucky, because I was in New York, the beginning of the gay lib movement, and I wanted to write about. I wrote a book, and I guess I'm proud of the fact, in some ways, that that book had an impact, and I know it had an impact because people write to me. Every few years it gets reprinted. It's been republished in a number of languages, a number of countries. But I don't know that I think very much about things I'm proud of. I mean, I had this lovely moment the other day. I could say this is something I'm very proud of. I ran into a current state minister who was very excited because he told me he'd just tweeted an article about me. And I thought, oh, that's nice. I like having, it's nice to think that somebody up there in Spring Street is actually reading about me and takes it seriously enough to tweet it.
So the future, Dennis, is there something or some issue or activity in your life that you haven't done?
Oh, a lot.
That you, if you had your wish, if you could make, this event or this activity happen, the number one, what would it be?
I think I wish is very dangerous, isn't it? I get three wishes? Going back in time.
Mac is a genie, he can grant you one.
Oh, I like this. Okay, yeah. Macca. So I wish I had learned to scuba dive. I wish I had tried to learn Spanish when I was much younger than I am now, because I find it difficult. And I wish that my partner, Anthony Smith, hadn't died as he did 7 years ago. Mm. Can you fix all of those in 2 minutes?
Well,
I got to say,
scuba diving, probably. Spanish, no, I have enough trouble with English. I can't bring your partner back, no. I'm sorry. But the memories sustain you, I know. They do.
Well, it was interesting, and that goes back to Paul's question. I didn't think when I started writing this that I would write as much as I did about Anthony, but that did keep coming back. And the knowledge that grief over time becomes something else. You never totally lose the grief, but it does actually mutate into, I think, yes, a whole set of memories and a recognition that if you've been with someone and we were together 22 years, you're actually shaped by your partner. And so in that way, and his family certainly see that, so I'm very much, continue to be very much part of his family.
I think that's beautiful, because you do. Yeah. When you have relationships, whatever the reason,
they never leave you. You know, from time to time, Dennis, I'm sure you'll be sitting there thinking about something and you'll think, I wonder what he would have thought.
No, I think that's right. And also, I'm very conscious of all the things I do that are actually the product of the influence of partners. And as Anthony was by far the longest partner in my life, and we lived together in the same house where I still live, in that sense, he's there constantly, yes.
Well, Dennis, thank you for your book. Thank you for your life, a life well lived. It's not over yet.
No, I'm glad you added that, because when you said thank you for your life, I thought, my God, what do they know?
He's checking out any minute.
You're going to have to come back and tell us on the next chapter, because if there's only 2 years' worth in the book, there's a whole bunch of other stuff you need to get down on the pad.
Well, I think, ego satisfaction does have some limits.
Yeah, that's right.
You're allowed to.
We owe you a lot. Thank you, Dennis. Our community owes you a lot. It's been a really interesting journey, a challenging journey, a happy journey, a sad journey, but it's been a journey that's very worthwhile. You've done us proud. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's great to be in here.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.